This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
It's time to go inside the front office of the Athletics with the general manager of the A's, David Forst. Here now is the David Forst Show with Chris Townsend.
Very rare can you go from the manager show to the general manager show. David Forst is with us here on A's Cast Live. And that gives you the opportunity to go, you know what, I don't agree with anything you have to say.
I feel like the headliner went first, and now the crowd's all warmed up. I got nothing to offer.
Oh, you're the veteran here. You kidding me? He's the rookie. He's setting you up.
Hey, he's got like 6 months on me. He's the old man in this dynamic. So
interesting trip, and we talked to him about it. Like, man, only two times in 26 years where you have a five-game set. I know you're used to that in AAA, but like, I mean, after we got done, I felt like I could do Tigers pre- and post-game show. We knew him so well. Like, I'm not used to that. I kind of liked it. It was interesting. Yep. It would be really interesting if there were some dust-ups early, but what'd you think about that?
Yeah, look, it's a lot of baseball to play against one team. And you know, to your point, I'm glad there weren't any dust-ups early because that's what we worry about in the minor leagues when you play a team six straight days is that, you know, you're going to get too familiar with one another. But I thought we played great. I thought we did a good job exploiting some of the things that we learned about them over the course of the series. And, you know, credit to Emo and Marcus and their game planning with the pitchers. We did a great job.
You know, the great thing about what we do here with A's Cast and A's Cast Live is we really give yourself and Mark a chance to, you know, talk about stuff that, you know, you're just not going to do with the beat writers all the time. And he talked about he wanted to open up now. He wanted to let it breathe a little bit. But the whole meeting that they had in Detroit, and we talked about that, and he wanted to talk about it today. And because you can't have meetings all the time, because if you have meetings all the time, you know, your guys are going to start rolling their eyes and not
for
care.
Sure.
A very productive meeting, that's good to see.
For sure, yeah. And he talked to me a little bit while we were in Minnesota about some of the things he wanted to say to the hitters and trying to pick the right spot. And look, after you lose nine straight, like, it's probably a pretty good time to say something and get it off your chest. And he felt like it went really well at the time, and obviously the results kind of speak for themselves. I know he and Tommy and Crony wanted to talk to the hitters about some of the things that felt like other teams were exploiting with us and hitting the ball in the air, not having anything to show for it, and we needed to play more team offense, and I thought they did a nice job of it.
You know, when you think about that losing streak, because that's kind of been like, I know with the fans, there's always that, oh, no, is this when the floor is going to drop, and unfortunately you lose nine straight. That happens real fast. What's that like? You're not used to that?
Yeah.
What's it like? How frustrating is it? I'm sure you want to make a ton of moves, but just take us through that.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you get to a point where you almost forget what it looks like to win a game. I mean, as a player, you know, I think you always have this idea that you're one hit away or one good game away. You know, when you have to sit there and watch, you sort of forget what this team does well and how, you know, how well we can pitch, how well we can put, you know, base runners on, and you almost say, like, God, I don't remember what it looks like when we win. So it's nice to sort of have a game to bounce out of it and then put on top of it, you know, three more, you know, winning four out of five to say, like, oh, wait, this team does have the ability to get guys on, move guys over, get them in. The pitchers do have the ability to throw up some zeros, and we're not going to be stuck in that, you know, sort of that pattern that we got into in those three series.
Well, Minnesota, those three games were all close.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you know, I've been calling this the year of discovery. Let's find the guys that can help now and help later. And we just had Zach Logue on, and I think about Martinez and his debut. You got guys going out there not walking anybody, not giving up any runs, young players who you acquired in a couple trades. how nice is it to see the guys from the trades helping out now?
100%. Well, you said it, not walking anybody.
It's something huge.
Something we've always preached with our pitching. Emo's done a great job. You don't put guys on base, you give yourself a chance. And in fact, I texted a little bit with AJ Hinch after the series, just because we have a long relationship, and he obviously wasn't happy with how his club played, but he made the point. He said, "Your guys didn't walk us, and you don't give them extra opportunities." So, particularly with Martinez and Logue, obviously guys who just got here, but to come in and make a good impression, they barely, Martinez did not get any big league camp time. We traded for him basically on the way out the door. Logue was there for just a little bit. We saw him a couple weeks ago for a quick stint, but for him to come up, pitch the way he has in two starts, give us an opportunity to win both times, that goes a really long way towards how we view him, how we view his opportunity at this level.
Don't you have to kind of like first, second starts in the big leagues understand that heart, emotion, 100. Adrenaline, right? It's kind of hard to judge these guys.
I mean, think back to James Caprillion's first inning in Fenway Park last year when, like, he admitted afterwards he could not feel the ball. He could barely, like, feel his feet touching the ground. Like, you have to understand there's going to be some emotions and some nerves involved. I mean, if you judge Cap on that first inning there, he never gets back to the big leagues. Like, we don't see anything of what we have afterwards. But, yeah, you got to give them a little leeway. And for particularly a guy like Adrian to come in, doesn't know anybody in the clubhouse, he's never been in an A's uniform, to come out there and throw strikes and perform the way he did is a really impressive thing.
We just told Zach Lowe, a guy that comes on this show all the time is Tom Glavine, the Hall of Famer, who was a hockey player drafted by the LA Kings. Mm-hmm. And Lowe's a hockey guy. I mean, there's something about that toughness of playing that sport, whether you're a kid that played football or you played, it's got to be tough to play that sport. And, he's not going to go out there and throw a bye all day long, but yeah. That new cutter he got in independent ball and everything, just this lefty looks tough. What are you seeing?
That's a pretty good comparison anytime you're talking about Tom Glavine for a left-handed pitcher. There's obviously some deception to his delivery. I mean, I was watching the post-game show on NBC, and they showed five or six clips in a row of him pitching, and it almost looks like his timing is just a little bit different. Every time he goes to the plate, he hesitates. He has that leg kick. The ball's hidden behind, and obviously Detroit hitters just didn't pick it up. So, anytime you can add deception to strike throwing and three or four pitches, you got a chance.
Numbers around the league are way down offensively.
Yes.
We've been breaking that down, and I don't know if it's you need to only be putting cigars in humidors, maybe not baseballs. Pitchers don't have spider tack and sunscreen anymore. I mean, I don't know. Like, you've got a bunch of guys with low averages,
yeah.
But the whole league is like that. What do you think's going on?
This is a different offensive environment that we're playing in. It just is. Whether it's the humidors, the baseballs themselves, whatever it is, there's enough data now that we're 5-6 weeks in the season to say, like, this is not the same game we've been playing the past few years. And whoever adjusts is going to, is going to thrive. Like, we are not the Yankees. We're not going to hit the ball out of the park regardless of what ball you're throwing up there. It just isn't going to happen. So you have to adjust. And that's something we cannot control, what the baseball does or what it looks like. So if our pitchers take advantage of it, if our hitters can find a way to adjust, then that's how you win games. But, look, there's enough data to say the offensive environment is different.
Sometimes really simple questions aren't that dumb, and I'm going to give one to you.
Okay.
Because you guys love your data.
Yep.
You love your analytics, and you really love science because StatCast is basically science, right? How do I know scientifically what a humidor does to a baseball in Oakland versus Houston versus Kansas City versus Minnesota versus Miami? Like, how do we know exactly what the humidors are doing to each baseball in each park?
You're going to have to ask someone a lot smarter than me. You just are.
An easy question. Isn't that dumb?
Yeah, you're going to have to ask someone else. I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you, how far the balls travel and, what certain exit velo and a certain launch angle does now compared to what it did a year ago. But I can't tell you exactly what the humidor actually does to the baseball. I don't know.
Isn't that weird? Because the baseball is the most important part of this game gear-wise. It's not your glove. It's not the bat. The ball. The game starts with the ball being thrown.
100%. So, look, the idea was obviously to create a consistent baseball across all 30 parks, but all 30 parks are different. Like, the humidored baseball in Oakland is going to travel differently than it does somewhere else. We've known that since the beginning of time, that the ball in this park, when there's a marine layer or at night, it just doesn't travel. It's different than other places.
So when we're looking at your team right now and you don't have that many position players, I immediately, that play in Detroit, Elvis goes out, Chad's coming in, they collide. Man, Chad got smoked in the face by Elvis's leg. You saw the net go. I mean, you worry about the players. And then this has kind of been my biggest fear, like, you only got so many guys on the bench, and it's a doubleheader. You got a whole nother game. What were you thinking when that goes on?
Yeah, first of all, I was so happy that both guys were okay. It looked awful for Chad, and you're just, you know, you see Nick out there on the field, and then Jeff Collins comes running out, and you're like, oh, my God, are we going to have to cart Chad off the field? You're just desperate for any sort of sign that he's doing okay. So thank goodness he was. But, yeah, particularly first game of a doubleheader, you're thinking, how the heck are we going to get through this thing with enough healthy bodies? I mean, we have chosen, obviously, to go with 12 position players, and that will change at the end of the month because it's mandated that you can only have 13 pitchers come May 29th. But we've chosen to go with 12 position players because we think an extra guy in the bullpen gives us the best opportunity to win games. But that comes with some risks, and it comes with some limitations on what Cots can do with the lineup. So, I'm very happy they were both okay. But, yeah, when that happens, you're immediately, you know, I'm texting Dan Feinstein. We're talking, you know, when's the next flight in Detroit? Who's the next guy up? Like, those are the things you have to think about right away.
I mean, if I'm thinking about it, I know you're thinking about it because I was like, oh, my God. Because, you know, a lot of these teams, yeah, you say you got 12 guys, but one guy's a backup catcher, right, who may not be able, I mean, that's like emergency, like the emergency quarterback maybe putting a guy out there. And when you talk about rosters, would you – how if you ideally could do it, let's say, you know, 25, 26, whatever we want to play, what ideally would you like to be able to play with roster-wise, pitchers versus position players?
You know, we've kind of gotten used to that 28 number here the last couple of years when we had it for COVID and had it at the beginning of this year. Like, that has felt like a little bit of a sweet spot. Ultimately, I think – you know, I don't think we'd go beyond 9 guys in the bullpen no matter what. Like, that's been a good mix. Cots and Emo have done a great job of giving guys days off, of moving guys around in roles. So I think we've found 9 relievers. Now, that sounds ridiculous to some people because back in the day, Tony La Russa was here at the A's with 6 guys out there, and they were all fine, and they were all throwing 100 innings each. So, look, the game has evolved. We're a little bit spoiled by the ability to have extra arms out there and have guys go one inning at a time. But, yeah, I mean, at 26, I think, you know, 14 and 12 has been pretty successful for us. And, again, like I said, it's not ideal to only have 3 guys on the bench in case of injury, in case you want to pinch hit. But this bullpen mix has worked really well for us.
Is the not having 28 at this point, is that really just about not adding to payroll?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, look, how many years do we play with 25? I think
forever.
Yeah, it's a big jump. I mean, it took us a long time to get a 26th man, you know, whether that's both players and the owner's side sort of adjusting to that, but I think 28 is a big step. I'm not sure we're going to get there full time.
Or you could have guys like Shohei Ohtani who do two different things.
Right.
Will you be more – we joke with Kotze because I played against Kotze in college. He was Shohei Ohtani.
He was.
He'd go out, go 3-for-4 against us, then he'd come in, throw 96, and close the game out from center field. I saw that with my own eye. Would you be more open to it now than ever before after seeing it with Shohei Ohtani?
I think I've always been open to it. You have to have the right guy. Like, this is a once-in-a-generation guy. You can't just turn anybody into a two-way player. I mean, they've got Lorenzen, too, who has played the outfield some, but, you know, they've turned him into a full-time starting pitcher. It's just, it's not easy. You're talking about playing at the highest level in the world, doing two of the hardest things to do in sports. This guy's a freak. I mean, he's an incredible athlete, incredible talent, and you can't just create Shohei Ohtanis out of thin air. So if you have the right guy, the right talent, sure, I'm totally open to it. But those guys don't come around very often.
Another guy that doesn't come around very often is Mike Trout. And unfortunately and fortunately, he's in the division. So we've gotten to watch. I mean, he's hit, what, 38 career home runs? 38, right? 38 career home runs against the A's.
Feels like 3,800.
I mean, just peppers the ball, and he's fast. And when you look at the data around him, just how great is he?
He's as great as you can possibly think up. I mean, I know there's other great players in the game, and the Sotos and Acuñas and Tatises. Like, no one is this guy. And we've seen it up close now for a decade. And he's incredible, and he's having as good a year as he's ever had. And I think I read yesterday his OPS plus is higher than it's ever been in his career. When we just talked about, with all the numbers that are down, the offense environment totally changed, this guy has figured out a way to continue being incredible.
Only one guy has finished a season over 233 OPS plus since World War II. And that was multiple times done by Superberry. when you're at Superberry's level,
no doubt.
It just tells you, it's like there's just not, and it's kind of like with Barry, like how do you get him out? It's like with Trout, like what does it say? Like what do you do? Like where do you go? Where do you? I mean,
walk him and pitch to the rhino. I mean, yeah, it's hard. And with this lineup now, with Taylor Ward swinging the bat the way he is, with Ohtani, like. You can't just pitch around him the way you have in previous years. So it's going to make this a really challenging weekend, and that's what makes him, you know, the best player we've ever seen.
What are you enjoying about this season? We always get so weird because you got to make decisions. So what are you enjoying?
I enjoy the wins. I still love winning more than I hate losing. So, look, I think we know how challenging this is. You know, we know we're giving opportunities to a lot of young kids, and we're playing in a tough division. But when all that comes together on a given night to put up a W, it still feels really good.
Well, I know you got this guy in AAA that's swinging it really well. And we had Fran Reardon on, and Fran said, first of all, I got to tell you, StatCast tells you how fast this kid is. And that it's one thing when the manager tells you, but he says, StatCast. Shea Langelier's StatCast says the guy flies.
He can run, yeah.
And I'm like, well, wait a minute. He swings it. He swings it for power. And he can run. When you start looking at his future, because obviously we're now probably looking at minors more than we normally do, is that a catcher if he runs the way he does?
Right now it is. I mean, he's so good back there, you know, both receiving, throwing. I mean, I get reports every night. This guy's throwing a 185 down to second, a 189. He's really good back there. He's a weapon on defense too. So, look, obviously we've got a Gold Glove caliber catcher here right now who hits in the middle of our lineup. So until we lobby the league to play two catchers at once, we're going to have to figure that out. But it's great to see what Shea's doing. I get those same texts from Fran about how fast he is, what an impact he has on the game, and it's exciting. And at some point, yeah, we're probably going to have to find a way to get him here. But I hope he keeps doing what he's doing at AAA for now.
Yeah, he sounds like Johnny Bench with wheels. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you got a Gold Glove catcher, and you can only play one catcher.
Yep.
Well, I want to see him hit. Where could he play?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to figure that out. We do have a DH spot, and we've used it for Murph a lot on his, quote, days off behind the plate. So we could be creative there. You know, Shea hasn't played anywhere else, so we don't have that answer yet, but it's something we're going to start discussing.
Well, that movie Moneyball, Brad Pitt was saying it's easy to play first base, right?
It's incredibly hard, Walsh said.
You know, and you know, when you're looking at certain guys, and we'll end on this because I saw him today. We hadn't seen him since spring training. There's some guys that bring this element to the clubhouse, and that is Ramon Laureano. He brings that toughness. He brings that I want to go out there and kick the you-know-what out of the other team.
Yep.
You just can't replace that. You can't teach it. It's just something that's there. Just talk about that edge he brings on and off the field to this clubhouse and to this ball club.
Yeah, it felt more normal the last 7 days watching our games, watching our lineup with him in it, because you get used to sort of the energy he brings, the sort of game interrupting effect he has out there, though he probably could have stayed a little closer to third base yesterday in the first inning. But no, it's it just feels normal to have him back, and I know how hard he worked during his time off and how much he wanted to be here. So I'm happy for Ramon that he served his time, he's back now, and he's where he wants to be.
We've talked about it before. There's the good and the bad, but you got to take both because that's who he is.
You're right. That's so someone asked me about it. I said, hey, that's Ramon. That's, you know, how does he get that far off third or get fooled by the little league play? That's Ramon.
Yeah, but it's all the other stuff that where when he's tracking a ball down to left center and throwing guys out at first, and you're looking at the Statcast going, how far did he throw? You gotta let the thoroughbred run, right? Kind of like Pache's the same way.
Yeah, I mean, Ramon ran down that ball in Triples Alley the other day. You see the way he runs out of the box down, you know, around the bases. So, yeah, it's nice to have him back.
No matter what, we're going to ask you each week, what are you happy about? We got to stay positive at times. I mean, we got to discuss everything, but
I like it.
Remember, it's a game. We're supposed to be having a good time.
I saw that in a movie at some point. This game's fun, goddammit, right?
And Cody wanted me to ask you, are you worried about the Ws, about the Dubs?
No.
Dub Nation, are you panicking?
Worried.
Some people are panicking.
No, they'll take care of it tonight. I'm not worried.
Okay. There you go. I've seen him at Warrior games. He's a fan.
They'll be fine.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
It's the David Forrest Show right here on A's Cast Live.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.